Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And welcome to Millennial Love, the independent lifestyle desk's weekly podcast on love, dating and relationships, hosted by me, Olivia Petter, lifestyle writer.
And me, Rachel Hosey, assistant lifestyle editor.
Dating today is a world away from what it was even just 10 years ago. With dating apps, millennials are finding it harder to meet people than ever before. And even when we do, who's to say we won't be ghosted, breadcrumbed or zombied? So that's why we decided to launch Millennial Love as two longtime singletons in their 20s, talking candidly about all of the things everyone is doing but not always willing to admit.
Today, we are super excited to welcome poet, producer and mental health ambassador Charlie Cox.
Hello.
Hi, Charlie.
Hi.
Thanks for joining us.
Hey, my pleasure.
So Livy and I are huge fans of your poems, but I think it would be good, in case anyone doesn't know you, if you could introduce yourself and explain a little bit how you got into poetry and what you're up to now.
Sure, that's always so much pressure.
You can do it. You know, you know the answers.
Yeah, I think I should really be solid on this one, shouldn't I? And somehow I'm not. I am a poet and producer. I got into poetry maybe like 10 years ago now.
And how old are you now?
23.
Wow, so you started at 13.
I was a small child and just never told anyone. I was so embarrassed that was my idea of fun or that was a hobby. So I was like, I'm just going to keep this in my diary and never show anyone and never talk about it. And then a really wonderful thing happened when I was about 18 or 19 and I discovered wine. And so
it's always a wonderful thing when that happens.
It's a really wonderful time when you're like, red wine, who knew?
Delicious.
And would stand on my side of my friend's sofa and read poems at them, whether they wanted to hear them or not. And eventually they're like, just can you do something with this? Like, this is so silly that you only ever do this when you're drunk or you think that it's really
write
embarrassing.
Write them or read them?
Read them. Mm. So I was like, oh, yeah, maybe. It's still like quite embarrassing and very personal. And then a year and a half ago, I put them on Instagram and it's done all right since.
Well, yeah, it has. Your book, we absolutely adore.
Thank you. When did
it come out, the book?
A month ago now.
Oh, so this is brand new.
Yeah.
It's very exciting.
I know.
We can talk about this a bit later, but how much of the poetry...
Oh, wait, so we should also say the name of the book for anyone wants to know.
Oh, yes.
She Must Be Mad.
Yes.
That's right, isn't it?
Yes.
And she is.
Yeah, absolutely. The best ones are.
I was going to say. So I was going to ask how much of your personal life influences your poetry, because you read those poems and they feel deeply personal, particularly the ones about love. But one of my favourite ones is actually the one where... It says, not everything I write is about you, which I also love, because I write songs sometimes and I know that, you know, they're inspired by certain encounters and certain people, but I'm a bit of a fantasist and I like to make things up. So I wonder if you're the same.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the whole book is very, someone used the word exposing the other week. Oh God, I made a terrible mistake. Yeah. It is very honest. It's very personal. It is all... Everything in there is true and very much about things that have happened to me, about my life, about my love life, so much of it. I've really shot myself in the foot. No one is ever going to want to marry me.
I mean, we feel the same.
I mean, yeah, it's preaching to the choir over here. Look at what we're doing every week.
We literally air our dirty laundry like every week.
Yeah.
But it's really funny because I've had so many failed relationships off the back of boys being frightened that I would write about them.
And so interesting.
It's a really... basic equation where if you're not horrible to me, then I probably won't write a poem about
or
you.
Or if they're nice to you, you'll
then
write
you get a
nice
poem.
Mm.
I know. Who thought? Who
Simple
knew?
As, isn't it? But what's quite interesting is obviously if you write like a memoir, then you might name people and there's lots more, you know, details put into your stories. But if in a poem, you know, there's always intrigue and like, oh, is that talking about... Do you get people going up to you going, oh my God, is that poem about so-and-so?
Yeah, the first time I did a poetry performance, I prefaced one of the poems with, and this was about one really awful date, and went into detail about it, and six of my friends were stood at the back with my mum, and they all went, oh, we hate him. I knew exactly who it was going to be about as soon as I read it. Yeah, I think there are a lot of nervous people that are picking it up and flicking through. But I did, out of grace and courtesy, a month before it went to finish copy, I got in touch with four guys and said, look, this might sound familiar to you. I just wanted to warn you that this is going in the book. Your name obviously isn't on it, but I didn't want you to think that I'd used you as fodder.
Nice courtesy of you.
And like, three were flattered, one didn't reply.
Really? I think it's really good though, because I mean, I would hope that those boys would read the poems that are about them, because it would help make them realise...
They all have egos as well.
Yeah, they do. They'd probably want to see themselves in print, first of all, but also I'm sure they'd benefit from seeing, Christ, I actually really hurt this girl, or these were the consequences of my actions. Like, that's a healthy thing. Like, there are some things that you just can't say directly to a person, but putting it into art, whether it's songs or poetry, I mean, obviously a lot of guys might read it and be like, oh yeah, whatever, but you would hope that, you know.
I've had a really astounding response. There was one guy in particular who was like, God, I was really awful to you and I'm so sorry.
Really?
Wow, I should have shown you this poem 2 years ago when I couldn't get out of my bed because I was so sad. Aww. But it is funny how people latch up. I think because poetry is so, I don't know, when you think of poetry, you think of it being like a really soft, lovely, sort of like little vignette of feelings and emotions. Mm. And that seems so much nicer to give to someone to try and unravel than
it's
the
like
hard,
a whole
solid truth
of writing someone a love poem or something. Yeah. But you know, it's not what it's like. And I think I love what you do, because I think people often associate poetry with old, stuffy, like things that they make you learn in school, and it seems like it's not relevant to modern day life. And you show that it is.
Thanks.
And speaking of which, we would love you to read one of your poems that we think, you know, gives a good taste of what you do. And we, well, actually quite a lot of us spoke to us, and because we, you know, there's so many about love and dating. And yeah, we thought we would ask you to read She Moves in Her Own Way.
I can do that. Try and stop me.
Yay! Okay, this is an exclusive, kind of, maybe. I don't know.
Sure.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Okay.
You ready?
Yeah. We're ready.
This is very, very intimate.
I know. Private reading.
It was sticky in your apartment. I stuck my eyes to every corner, where you'd stuck up old postcards, an entire museum of your life and more, a window. Frame the shrilling stuck-up summer silhouettes in the pub down below. You stuck a scratched record on that played the once smooth staccato. You poured me a glass of wine that slipped sticky to my sides. It slipped your fingers across my thighs. I felt stuck. This time, I promised myself I wasn't giving up. You said, stick around, and I cleared off the dark sediment red wine muck from my lips and kissed you in a way that begged to reverse ownership. But instead, it sellotaped my wrists tight together around your hips whilst my internal monologue screamed, you're hopeless at this. You don't want to do this. You always do this. You don't have to be this person. You don't have to quench your thirst on him. Tell your body its anxiety isn't a passion to burst on him. Don't try and fill the void with empty consumption. This moment in time that your lie and say was sweet seduction was just another episode of you orchestrating a personality reduction into a girl you have no business being, no pleasing being. Stop teasing feeling from an inner drought that only dried to be that way because you gave all of your kindness out instead of spending it on yourself. I stop as your eyes unstuck from mine, you swig from the bottle of wine, and I muster up the courage to say, I don't want to be just tonight. I've said it before and let it be denied, and you laugh with a cocksure sigh and hit me with another line like, why can't you just be a girl for a good time? And it's the just that juts and ricochets, and it slaps stuck to my ongoing conflict with myself. I reach for a souvenir placed on your shelf, throw it between my palms. Imagine what false comfort I'd find within your arms and put it back. I give learning from lesson a crack. I stop myself from telling you that you're such a... When you text me in the next morning, to say my excuse as a woman is appalling for leaving in a rush. It was sticky in your apartment, and it was there that I realised I was bored of being stuck, as a girl whose muchness amounted to just the night.
Oh, I love it so much. So
it's
good.
It's so good. It's so good.
It's so good. There are so many lines that I love. One in particular, I think, is the one where you say you kiss them desperately trying to reverse ownership. I love that because I feel like that's, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like that kind of describes when you feel like you're more into that person than they are into you, and you're desperately trying to switch that around so that you feel like you're in control.
It's so hard.
It's so hard.
I find myself in that situation more often than not.
Yeah, and me too.
Yeah, particularly in that moment, I just remember thinking, if I can kiss you in a certain way, then maybe I'll be the strong, confident one that's calling the shots with what happens next. And then instead, you know, you go to do it and then I completely melted away. I was like, I'm too scared. I can't do this. Maybe you are in control, which is so dumb. And by the end of that night, I realized that so much of what I was doing and how I was behaving was really bad. And I wasn't being kind to myself. I really wasn't listening. You know, you can consent to someone, but you also have to consent to yourself. And I didn't realize that I was never consenting to how I really felt.
That's so interesting. I think there are so many parts of that that are really relatable. For me, it's kind of, there are one of the levels, it's this idea of feeling like you need to be the cool girl, the good time girl, the chill girl. And there's that other part of maybe you don't actually want to sleep with this person or stay over with this person, but you're there now. And so you feel like you have to. And do you?
It's so messed up. I can't remember really a single situation where I have been single and I've been dating where I felt comfortable owning my own actions with how a night ends. Because you almost feel as though, or you're made to feel, and that's not necessarily from the other person, but through like years of entrenched, like awful bad learning, that you owe someone something, or you know, you've led someone on, or if you're here, then this means this, or, and so then it just becomes so much easier to go with something instead of working out your own internal battle and then being fearful of the response of somebody else.
Yeah.
That just sounds so much trickier than going like, okay, fine, I guess I'll just stay here then, shall I?
If you really like someone, your almost gut reaction is to just be submissive in every situation, just to be like, I'm so easygoing.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to sort of get into that into our main discussion topic today. But before we do, let's have dating debrief time.
Well, do I have a story for you?
Oh, it's a good story, this one. I've heard it.
Okay, so we did an episode last week on holiday romances, and I didn't tell this story, but I will tell this story. So I went on a girls' trip to France, and we thought, you know, the boys aren't here this time because we did it last year with guys, and this was just girls, less people. There were like seven of us, or six of us. And we were like, you know, it's going to be super chilled. We'll just have some nice drinks and go out on a couple of evenings. Anyway, we went out one night in the south of France, and I came back with a boy, a French boy,
scandalous,
who was 4 years younger than me. and we get back to the house.
Also, very fit. I've seen pictures.
Yeah, he's a model.
Ooh.
Also, so not usually my type. Anyway, we then get back to the house, and all of the girls are stranded outside the house. No one can get in. Pretty sure they were also all topless as well. I don't know why. There was just something very feral about this holiday, like being with all of your closest friends. Like, we were just all like naked the whole time. So it's just a very weird situation.
You're painting such a fabulous picture
like
right
any
now.
Any sort of straight men listening to this are going to be like having hot flushes on the tube.
I was clothed. My friends definitely weren't.
Sure.
So then all of the girls are stuck. I was like, guys, what's gone wrong? Why can't we get into the house? And we had the key, but the key was broken somehow. Like, it was a really old French door. So we just couldn't get in. Meanwhile, the girl who owns the house was with a guy at his house. So it wasn't there. So we were like, what are we going to do? Anyway, somehow it's like 5 a.m. as well. And we're all so drunk. And all, like, you can just imagine like drunk girls trying like, oh, I can't do it. You do it. No, I can't do it. Literally trying to get into the house.
That's me every morning just trying to double lock my front door.
Yeah, I mean, we're so incoherent. Anyway, we managed to get into like one section of the house, like downstairs, that isn't connected to the rest of it. But there were like sofas and two beds. So we'd all just slept there. Woke up the next morning. my friend comes back. We're all still trying to get in, still
and the
drunk.
French boy is still here at this
French
point.
French boy is still here at this point, wondering, like, what the hell am I doing with all these crazy naked ladies? And
I think, probably okay with it.
I think he was wondering anything at that time.
I think he was like, I'm having a hotel.
Anyway, he then, we basically figured out we need to smash open a window to get into the house. So this guy goes and gets this ladder. It's like a 7 or 8 foot long ladder. Carries it, I don't know how, because we tried to move it down the day after and it was so heavy. Just does it all on his own, flings it up against the side of the house, climbs up like Spider-Man with a rock, smashes a rock through the window, unhooks the window, gets into the bathroom, then has to unlock the bathroom door because it's locked from the outside. Had to like break into it, so like move these panels. I don't actually know how he did it. Move these glass panels that were in the door to like get his hand through and unhook it. Anyway, he did it. He unlocked it. He opened the door and the six naked girls were like, oh my God, you're a hero. Meanwhile, I'm thinking, oh my God, this poor guy got so much more than he bargained for last night. He's probably really regretting meeting us.
And you've been married ever
and
since.
Yeah, and now we're getting married. No, it was just, yeah, it was a very bizarre set of circumstances. And then he ended up hanging around the next day till like 4 p.m. And it was just a weird situation. I was like, what are we doing here? Like, we're 24 years old. How is this happening right now?
It's so random. I love it. But I wish one of you guys, the girls, had, like, been the one to go up with the ladder.
So
again.
Do I. I know. I just didn't have the
Why
strength.
Why didn't you need the stupid man to do it?
I was still drunk. I don't know.
Right.
I don't know.
Health and safety.
Yeah.
Not getting on a ladder.
I suppose.
I agree, though. The feminist inside me was like, I can break into the house myself.
Exactly.
But carry I didn't. I just brought the boy home.
Well, at least you contributed something useful to the night.
Exactly.
And the morning.
Yes.
The next day.
How's your life, Rachel?
Oh, great. I haven't been up to any dramatic antics like that, but I have fallen in love with Mamma Mia 2, the film. Oh, my God, I'm so obsessed. But actually, what I'm mostly in love with is the character of young Bill. I am so in love with him. And if you've seen the film, which I've seen twice, and I've been listening to the soundtrack nonstop since I saw it, there's this one scene where Lily James' character is on the boat with him, and literally all I feel like I want in my life right now is to be on a boat with young Bill. However, on a more serious note, I will say I think this film is so brilliant because actually it's about being sexually free and liberated as a woman and having fun. It's about like women raising their babies, single moms, and not needing a man. And I think it actually sounds like a really lovely message, as well as the fact that it's just like bloody awesome tunes, like a fantastic cast. It's a very uplifting film. Could not recommend more.
I need to go and see it.
I haven't seen it either.
Guys, I'll come with you. I'll see you again.
It's a date.
Well, I'm just saying, it's called Here We Go Again, so I will keep going again.
And again.
And again. Absolutely. So, today, guys, we're going to talk about...
Wait a minute. We have a bio of the week.
Oh my gosh, we do have a bio of the week.
We have a bio.
I'm so sorry.
Of the week.
I was so distracted by the thoughts about young Bill that I forgot. So bio of the week is from a man called John. John is 27, and his bio reads: body type, works out but lives down the street from a Colombian bakery, backpacked once. I thought that was so cute.
Wait, hold on. Wait. Works out but lives down the street from a Colombian bakery. I don't get it.
So
he goes
like
to the gym, but
also goes to the bakery.
Eats
like
a lot
that's like
bread.
A funny lol.
Okay,
line.
Got it. What do they serve in a Colombian bakery though?
Doesn't matter. It's a bakery.
Okay, sorry.
Maybe we should go.
Yeah.
I would.
Well, I just didn't know that Colombia was renowned for its baked goods.
It does.
Coffee
it's a,
and chocolate and cocaine.
It's a bakery. There's gonna be
it's
delicious.
It's a Colombian bakery.
Cocaine cookies.
The fact
cocaine
that it's,
cookies.
Guys, you're just
thank
really,
God you're here, Charlie. I mean,
I get it, well,
it makes sense.
Really missing the point of this. What I'm saying is, this is quite a lol line, and I quite like it because it's a bit more down to earth. Because you see a lot of guys who are just like, gym is my life, and he's like, work out, but also Colombian bakery. And I'm like, very much on board with this. And then I also think it's quite funny how he's done the backpack once, because so many guys on dating apps, and probably girls too, are like, I'm just a free spirited traveler, and I'm like backpacking all the
Here
time.
Here I am with a doped up tiger and my singer beer wife beater.
Exactly. Yeah. We've seen that so many times, and he's like, backpacked once. Quite frankly, I might steal this from myself. I mean, I don't live down the street from a Colombian bakery, but
Have you backpacked once?
Yes.
Have you?
Yes.
Where'd you go?
Southeast Asia.
Did you?
It's such a cliche. But I didn't do the classic route. I did a slightly... I went to different countries, I'll have you know.
Oh my God, you're so alternative.
Proud of you.
Thanks, guys. Thanks so much. So, as I said about 2 minutes ago, we're going to talk about why we let people we like treat us like rubbish. Mm. Because this happens, I see it with myself, I see it with all my friends, both men and women. People who can be like super strong, super independent, super don't let anyone walk over them, don't let anyone treat them badly. Then they like someone. It's not even just a crush, it's not like they've fallen in love, but they let that person treat them like an awful human being, give them not the time of day, not message them, like do all these things that just, they know that they deserve to be treated better. And they would tell any of their friends, what are you doing? Get out of there. You deserve so much better. But why can't we see it when it's ourselves?
It's so horrible and hard, isn't it? I feel like it's maybe my hobby is to engage in any sort of relationship where I think someone might mistreat me, because it gives you validation on all of the negative things that you already think about yourself. Mm. So it's like a weird, like, masochistic comfort. Like,
do you think?
I think that's where mine comes from. If I was to psychoanalyze myself, like, I think I'm like fat and boring and ugly. So if a guy is like, yeah, you are fat and boring and ugly, I'm like, oh, okay, good. Like, I just wanted to make sure we're all on the same page with that, which is nonsense.
No, I know what you mean, though. I've had guys before like exacerbate these like really deep insecurities that I didn't even know existed.
It's like negging. There's like some totally deluded supposed strategy for guys to pick up women by like negging them, where it's like when you give them a really backhanded compliment. I'm trying to think of an example now, but it's like they might be like, oh, your hair's a really nice style, have you ever thought about like dyeing it brunette though, or something like that.
I think it's almost even more subtle than that. Like, I've had guys, the things that have ruminated in my head that have made me feel terrible about myself, like I've had guys say to me, oh, I think you're really hot and funny, but I don't want to see you anymore. And that really, really affected me, because that's a compliment in one sense. But for me, all I hear in that is, I think you're superficial. I don't think you're intelligent. I don't think you're interesting. I don't think, you know, you're as intelligent as I am. Like, though, I just hear the negatives.
And also that hot and funny still isn't good enough.
Exactly. Like,
when
I'm
we're constantly being told that you should be hot and funny, and that's how you get a guy, and he's still, I don't like him. Glad he's not around anymore.
He was one of the ones that deluded me and made me keep going back, being like, oh no, but you're right. It is masochistic. We know that we're not being treated well, and we hear our friends telling us, he's awful. What are you doing? Like, you're so much better than him. And I want to, you know, reiterate that this obviously isn't just about men. I'm sure that women do this too.
Yeah.
But it's we just keep going back for more. It's almost like self-harm in a way.
Yeah. But you know what? It's so interesting, Charlie. You were saying that you sometimes think you go for guys that on some level you know aren't going to treat you right. I never do that. I never when I start seeing a guy, think like, oh, he seems like the type of guy who's going to treat me badly, but I don't care. I like him anyway. I always think they're going to be good and decent.
I think young Charlie would see danger, or I think so much of it comes into having really poor mental health and suffering with a mental illness, where I only really knew sadness, and I only really knew what that was, but was so embarrassed to talk about it, because it was embarrassing to be like, I've got depression, or I've got anxiety. But then if it was like a bad breakup, or a guy that you could see was being a negative influence, I'd be like, oh, it's just because I'm in this awful relationship.
I see.
And that felt like an okay mask. Now I don't deliberately like pick out guys unless you're like, you look like you could make me cry. You know, the worst ones now are the ones that, like, God, you used to date such awful men. Like, how did you do that? And then they come in with this facade that they're not going to be awful. Mm. But through that, think they then have the agency to do awful things because it's not quite as bad as what they think other men have done to you.
That's before. What I was going to say is I actually think the really difficult treatment to deal with is not necessarily... Because there are major things that someone can do that treat you badly, which are, you know, absolutely horrific. Things like domestic abuse, things like very obvious gaslighting where they manipulate you to doubt your
own... Yeah,
let's
just pause and talk about gaslighting for a sec, actually. Because it's something that did come up in Love Island after... Adam and Rosie had a thing. Anyway, and there was a Women's Aid sort of put out a warning saying that this incident was showcasing signs that pointed towards, you know, emotional abuse and manipulation. And then people were talking about gaslighting, which is basically where you manipulate someone to doubt their own sense of reality, and it's emotional abuse.
It's saying things like, well, you're making that up. And making someone doubt what they perceive to have happened. And I think those are pretty major things, like things like slut shaming, body shaming. But I think it's the really minor things that keep you coming back to someone for more.
Yeah. Yeah. And I actually do think that on some level, we are attracted to people who we deem exciting in some capacity. Mm. And the fact of the matter is that if they sort of aren't replying to your messages or this, you know, so often I see my friends and myself as well will sort of be dating someone, it's in the early stages, and you're like, when you're with them, you're like, oh my god, we got on so well, this is so great, but then they mess you around so much because then they don't message you for 5 days and they like, but then they'll like give you all these mixed signals and all this stuff that's messing you around, and you're like, yeah, it's not right, I deserve to be treated better. Then you do ultimately meet up and you're like, oh, but you know, I just really like it when I'm with them. And you're like,
me.
It's so common. And it's like, but they're not treating you right.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I guess like so much of it as well comes from, as women, we're constantly told that we have to be liked.
You know, yeah.
You've got to be...
The people-pleasing.
The likeable, exactly. You know, the soft girl, the funny girl, the pretty girl. Mm. But ultimately, the nice girl.
Yeah.
Which is very dull. Like, very, very dull. So yeah. Then...
And there's also this idea that you're like, don't be a nag. Yeah, don't be stressy.
Mm.
Exactly.
Don't
be like his mother. Don't, you know. And and then so if you can find someone that likes you enough, you're like, oh, well, okay, maybe I can do this. Maybe I can be a nice person. But they like me, and maybe I'm not a nice person. So how do I keep up this act? How do I keep up this facade? And then anything, you know, any form of like even the slightest form of emotional abuse is then like, but I can put up with that because they like me and they're sticking around.
Because they're like, dropping you breadcrumbs of interest.
And they're making me feel like I'm worthwhile.
Exactly.
Like,
I can't believe.
They're kind of making you feel worthwhile. Mm. And because this is where, like, I hate it, but everyone always says treat them mean, keep them keen. And, like, that's obviously, like, quite a stupid thing to do. But the reason it in some way works is that it taps into the other person's insecurities.
Yeah.
And it makes them feel insecure about how much you like them, which then makes them want you more. And it's mind games. It is mind games. It's not healthy. And it's like what I always say is that you need to remember that you deserve to be treated as a priority, not an option. But the stupid thing is that humans seem to be hardwired that when it's just easy and you both like each other the same amount and everything's just like easy breezy and like great, it's like, this is fine. But we sort of thrive on when it's not so easy and it's the drama and they're like, do they like me? Do they not like me? It's the game. It's the chase. And why are we like this?
I think, when you were saying that, I was like, you know what? I think the reason why we're sort of taught to chase after people that maybe don't like us is because we think that it's going to be so much more gratifying when we do get them at the end. And we're just unable to see, like, you know, they're not interested. They're just messing you around. It's the mixed signals. But equally, there's a part of you that's always subconsciously like, no, but when I do get them to come on a date with me or to ask me on a date or to, you know, whatever.
Fall madly in love with me.
Yeah, they're going to fall madly in love with me. And I'm like, yes, I did this amazing achievement. It's weird, isn't it?
I think there's so much of that comes from literature and film and songs. And, you know, we are fed so much rubbish from such a young age of what that's going to look like. And, you know, if you just hang about or if you just stay quiet or, you know, you keep chasing, like, then you'll have this most, like, the most amazing anecdote to tell your kids in 10 years to come. Or, you know, like, there's going to be that magic moment when you do your wedding speech. Like, and you remember when I was a psycho for 3 months and everyone was like, what is she doing? But I knew what I was doing. Like, that doesn't happen.
Doesn't happen. Also, it makes you sound like completely bonkers if you're like, oh no, but I texted you loads and then you eventually caved. Like, that's not how, like, you want your narrative to be.
It's not fair. No, you know, because it then also, and I think women in this situation, from personal experiences, it's always you that's the crazy one.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's you that has driven. I had a conversation with my dad about this morning on the phone. I have entered a I have a not boyfriend currently.
Ah, I see.
Classic not boyfriend.
Someone you're seeing.
A not boyfriend that also doesn't live in this country. Summer romance. Now I'm no idea what's going on. Anyway, classic. So I said to my dad, I was like, Dad, look, really don't want to mess this one up. Give me your, like, most brutal male advice.
I love that you went to your dad.
I mean,
it's really cute.
We've never had this relationship before, but so it's like a new one where I'm like, look, I need you. Help me.
That's so cute.
And he was like, yeah, just ignore him. Don't like, don't text him. He's like,
really?
Maybe, he was like, maybe he doesn't even like you.
That's
like,
a brutal.
I was like, what? No, I mean, yes, I asked for brutal advice, but, and then I had to explain to him why that was so unhealthy and damaging. And like, why can't, as two consensual adults that clearly have feelings for each other, just be like, I like you. Yeah, I like you too. Cool. Done.
I know.
Why is that so hard?
Oh my! I don't know. I'm literally, I have the same situation as well. I've been in that situation so many times where it's like, you know, two people like each other, but then you just sort of fall off the radar with, like, communication. But there's no obvious reason as to why. It's just like, it was going well, and then, I don't know, someone goes away, and then there are mixed signals.
That's not necessarily them treating you badly.
No, it's not.
Things are mutually fizzling.
It's not. Yeah. But how do you know if it's mutually fizzling or not? I feel like you almost need the cutoff point to be like, do you like me or not? But obviously no one ever wants
that. Then you get told, like, as a woman, like, if you say, like, look, do you like me or not? Then you're going to scare him away.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. Why are we always told, don't scare
them away?
Why are we
the ones that are scaring them away? It's like, actually, you're hurting my feelings. Like, you're upsetting me.
Yeah.
You're putting me in a real place of jeopardy where I either need to know if I'm getting on with my life or I'm moving forward with you.
Yeah. It does go both ways as well, though. Like, I've definitely advised male friends to be like, maybe just like, when they, like, are pursuing a woman they like, and sometimes I'd be like, maybe just like, chill out a little bit, because if you're like this keen, it might put her off.
Yeah, I have too. And, you know, it is a double standard, because if guys are too keen with me, I'm instantly put off.
Oh, really? I love that.
Do you?
Please.
If I like them.
If I like them back, sure.
Yeah.
But I never do if they like me.
It just depends. And, like, it's so funny. I think perceptions of women in romance, like, yes, you obviously get, like, the crazy guy as well. But I do think the crazy woman is much more problematic and prevalent. And I remember talking to a guy I was seeing once, and we were talking about exes. And he was like, yeah, I had this ex, and she was just really angry. That's all he said about her. And I felt like such a bad person. My first reaction was like, okay, don't
be
angry.
Yeah.
Never be angry. But how awful is that? Like, instantly take that as, like, you know, instructions to get this guy to like me.
I know. But it's difficult when you're dating, because you're trying to put forward this best version of yourself, or the version of yourself that's going to make them most like you. And it's really hard. I have so many times, actually, like, kind of let myself be treated badly by guys and then not really done anything about it at the time until it ended for whatever reason. And then it's been months later and I've seen them at a party or something, because I seem to end up still like weirdly friends, or at least in vague social circles with guys I've dated. Lol, I need to expand my social circles. And then
come on out with me.
Yeah, please, I'll come. I need a new pool. No, anyway, what I'm saying is, it's always been like months later, I've seen these guys again, and then like in a slightly alcohol-induced confidence, like told them, had a massive go at them and told them how badly they treated me, and like, we slept together and then you didn't message me for 5 days, and like, you know, really had a go at them. And then they've always been like, oh my God, yeah, like, wow, I'm so sorry for messing you around. You're so right. And I'm like, yes. Yes, I am. But I never confronted them about it at the time when I was in it, because I don't know, you know, it didn't,
we tolerate it. We just tolerate it because we're too scared of being rejected.
Yeah, and I hate it when it can make you feel so insecure. It's something as simple as a person you like not messaging you. Mm. You know, a friend recently was freaking out because she'd been like 2 dates with this guy and it was going really well, but then like she messaged at like one night, like an evening, and then it had got to like lunchtime the next day and they'd been like, you know, messaging quite quickly and he hadn't replied, and she was like, I swear to God, if one more man ghosts me, I'm gonna throw myself out of this building. And like, you know, it messes with your head, and she was like getting so wound up about it just because he hadn't messaged back. And like, she's not crazy, of course she's not crazy, she just likes him.
Yeah.
And then you can't help but think the worst when you've been ghosted so many times and like been sent really mixed signals. And then when you really like someone, you get so cynical about it and you're like, he's going to ghost me because it happens. And then it feels awful.
Oh, exactly. And then that's where you start to like reduce yourself down to a much more like basic being and like a basic form of like, okay, well, I know from previous relationships where I've been ghosted, you know, it could have been because I was too full on, or I was crazy, or was I being like a psycho, yeah, like, oh, psycho over
it's
this.
It's awful.
Like all of this horrid terminology.
Yeah.
So then when someone even shows like the slightest sign, when they're probably actually just busy, you go into a complete meltdown of, I'm not good enough again.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's awful actually, because what we should be saying to ourselves is what our friends are saying to us, which is like, well, if they ghost you, they're a terrible human and you don't want to be with them and you deserve so much better. But it's really hard to tell that to yourself and make you believe it. You know, I've had it before when I've dated a guy and they've ended it with me. And like, on one level, I've briefly thought like, oh, I wonder if I could like ask for feedback and be like, what do I need to work on?
I love doing
like,
that.
Then I'm like, no, 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 I don't need to work on anything. I need to just find someone who likes me as I am. Right, right, right.
Am I right, ladies?
Or should I ask, what do I, no, should we be thinking like, oh, what can I work on so they don't treat me badly or something? Or
my biggest breakthrough, and as a piece of advice that I give to my friends before a first date, and it completely changed the way that I looked at dating and how people felt about me, is before a first date, I would always be so nervous. Like, am I going to be funny enough? Are they going to find me attractive? What if they don't fancy me? What if I'm not, like, I don't come across as intelligent? What if I do this? And then would get there and be such a wreck and just sit there as a shell, like, hello, my name's Charlie. I'll have the cheapest wine, thanks. I don't know if we're going to split the bill or not. And it was always horrible. But now, when I walk into a dating situation, I'm like, you actually have to impress me.
Yes.
Like, it's not...
That's what my mum always tells me.
They have to impress you. They have to excite you. They, you know, in the same way that you're so, you know, built and wired to feel like you have to be the impressive shiny object at the table, so do they.
But you know what, it goes the other way, in that I've been the other person who's been a bit too arrogant, and like I've gone into dates thinking like, my God, I really hope I actually like this one, and then come out of it being like, oh my God, I really like them, oh my God, this never happens. And then they didn't like me and I'm like, what how? Joking, not how.
No, but how?
No, but seriously, how? No, have you met
really
me?
How? I'm looking at you right now thinking, how?
Thank you. Hey. Guys, okay. What? Obviously, it's so hard because we're all still learning how to do this. And I don't know if anyone is ever fully an expert in this, but what can we do? What do you think we all need to do, men and women, to try and not let people treat us badly in relationships and dating, I think it comes down a lot to trying to remember that, like, in a few weeks, if this has not continued, or like a few months, you're probably not even going to think about it very much anymore. You know, if you think it's going towards its end, then if you try and like remove yourself as if you're looking back on it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
That's a good idea.
Obviously, much easier said than done.
Everything's much easier said than done. I think, to be honest, if you ever find yourself in a situation with a guy or a girl where you feel like you're putting on a show, where you feel like you have to manipulate them to like you, like...
Yeah, but the early stages of dating, you're always putting on a show, like putting on your best version
but,
of yourself.
Yeah, but, you know, the early stages of dating could be a few weeks, could be a few months. Like, it could, in any situation, really. If you're not boyfriend and girlfriend, I think, until you reach that point, you're always... If you feel like you have to be this certain type of person who you're not, they're not the right person for you. You should... All of this stuff that we talk about, it should just happen subconsciously. Like, you should just get on really well on the first date and not be worrying about, am I being funny enough? Was that joke too weird? Or, you know, is this dress too short? Oh God, what if he doesn't like my shoes? You know, like...
Yeah, I think it's remembering that, A, your happiness and health is a priority always in any situation, whether that's, you know, your work life or your dating life or your whatever part of your personal life. But also... You know, we're so entrenched in this idea of like no pain, no gain. No good situation is painful. And if you're experiencing pain in something that's supposed to be the exciting throes of like new love or fancying someone, and you're finding yourself feeling that awful and that disgusting, it's absolutely not right. And it's not going to get any better. You don't break a pain threshold with dating. Like, there is no threshold. You just have to walk away from it.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Actually, I think that's a really good one. If you are being made to feel insecure about yourself because of the way someone's treating you, not the one.
No. Nope.
And I also just thought of one more, which I kind of touched on earlier, but what would you tell, ask yourself what you would tell your friends if they were in your situation and listen to yourself. Okay, great time, guys. Few minutes left for a dating dilemma. Let's do it. Thank you for sending this one in. Here goes. Hi, guys. I'm wondering if you can help me. I moved to London in February after 2 amazing years living and loving in New York. I suffer with my mental health, with problems coming and going over the last 7 years from the age of 18. Since moving to London, my anxiety and depression has spiked to the point that I'm now seeking help. God, this sounds ridiculous as I write it, as I'm generally a happy, sociable, functioning person, and this has really knocked the wind out of me.
This mental health cocktail is making me feel like a different person. I used to love dating, having casual sex, spontaneous nights out, and I even liked the horrible dates I had from apps, as they were the funny stories. And now, I don't know if it's a byproduct of the anxiety or the depression or the loneliness, or if it's the fact that I've been single for such a long time. 7 years. But I now feel like I want to be with someone.
I've had short-lived things with several guys over the years, some fun and some heart-wrenchingly unfun, but I've always liked being single and enjoyed my life, only willing to add someone to it if they were really going to enhance it. I also have no single friends here that I can go through this with. I'm trying to unteach myself that wanting to be with someone is weak and that I actually am worthy of love.
The low self-esteem and confidence issues I'm having are leaving me in the dark. I've been on one date in the last 18 months and I have no idea how to approach my dating life now, not only with my current mental state, but also carrying the fact that I think I am truly ready to find someone. It's terrifying. I can't thank you enough for this podcast. I look forward to it every week. It reminds me that I am not, in the words of Enid, Carrie's Vogue editor, the last single girl.
Aww.
Love that she referenced Sex and the City.
I mean, that's such a sweet ending. There's so much to unpack in this message. It makes me sad that she's, you know, she said it sounds ridiculous to say that, you know, she was struggling with her mental health and she's a happy, sociable, you know, person. But we all know that, you know, you can be really struggling with your mental health, even if on the outside you seem bubbly as anything. I think very difficult. So I guess I'm kind of in a similar situation. I'm the same age, single for a very long time. I'm, you know, I can't really relate to the mental health struggles, but I completely agree with this idea of, you know, only wanting to be with someone if they're going to enhance your life. But I also relate to the fact that she says when you've been single for so long, you almost, it kind of becomes part of your identity to be like, I'm single and I don't need a man. And then actually you sort of almost feel like you can't say to yourself, but I might like to find love. And that's okay. It's okay. It's not weak. It's not weak. Right?
No, far from weak. Completely far from weak. That's, you know, it's the most basic innate human response is wanting to find love or be loved or find comfort within that. I would say it's so important to look after yourself enough that when you meet someone, you know, exactly like what we were just talking about with, it's so difficult when, you know, if you are mistreated, to know how much of that is you or how much is them or how you handle that. And if your mental health isn't in a particularly good place, it might be worth spending that time that you might spend on a date with someone else on yourself and really looking after yourself to a point where when you're through that, you know that you are in a really good headspace where there's no room for it to be codependent or you're not finding someone to fix you. Or because then it gets so much trickier and then you feel worse about it. And then, take some time for you. You know, there's plenty of dates. There will be plenty of years, plenty of time for Tinder.
Yeah.
But now sounds like a really good time to just sort of step back. And also in that time, work out what you really want. Mm.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because I think when you're going through a hard time, if you're single, we are fed this idea that someone can fix you. Like if you're in a, like you said, like if you're in a relationship, that person will fix you.
It's not the root of happiness, guys.
No, it's of course
and
it's
not. And it never works.
And it never works. But it is also your, it's sort of like your gut reaction. Like, okay, well, if I find someone, they'll, you know, help me escape all of these other problems. No, they won't. Like you have to sort out your own issues first and prioritize your own health above any other person.
Yeah. Because otherwise I'm not sure you're gonna go like have a healthy relationship.
No, of course you're not, because there'll be all these underlying issues that you're still battling until you're, you know, obviously no one's ever 100% okay all the time, but until you're feeling, you know, comfortable with yourself, comfortable in your own skin.
But fantastic that she's seeking help. She's taking action.
Yeah, amazing.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And I get that maybe you feel like, you know, you want to just get things sorted. So you're going to seek help and then you feel like, okay, then I want to meet guys. I want to go on dates. I want to be in a relationship. I want to find love. And you feel like, I want to do all this now. I want to be proactive. I want to get it sorted. I want to get it done. But I don't think it's as simple as that. Sadly, you can't just be like, okay, I'm ready now for a relationship. Because sadly, you can't just like buy one online.
No, and you're putting too much pressure on whatever relationship that is. You're expecting too much from it. Mm. You're inevitably going to be disappointed.
Mm. I think when it comes to low self-esteem and confidence issues, I completely understand how that makes you nervous to date or whatever. But I think, like Charlie said, that is something that will build up when you focus on yourself. Like, maybe, I don't know, it might sound kind of silly, but I almost think taking up a new hobby that's something just for yourself can make you feel really great. Like, I recently joined a netball team, and honestly, I'm like so happy with this decision. Like, it's already like enhancing my life so much. It's only just started, and it's like being part of a new team, and it's finding a new activity, and I don't know, it's kind of just like something that can give you something new that's exciting and that's for you and will give you some sort of boost. And I think, you know, you can work on self-esteem and confidence from all sorts of angles and, you know, things like that. There's no quick fix. It all takes time. But I think because as well you're sort of, you know, aware of all these things that are on your mind, and things will get better because you're working on it.
Yeah, I mean, as she said in her email, you know, she's seeking help, she's being proactive. And like, it takes such strength and guts to seek any form of help.
Mm.
It's so difficult. It's so, so difficult. But it's arguably the most difficult part of all of it, is accepting that you need to talk about it or that you need outside help. So she's already at the peak of that mountain, and now things, I hope, will get a little better.
Yeah.
But please focus on yourself and not on men.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not yet. Just not yet.
But also, it's okay if you're for your priorities to change. Like, you may have had 7 years of like loving having casual sex, whatever, and then you might be getting to the point where you're a bit over it. Like, that's okay. It doesn't mean like, oh, now something wrong with me, I don't enjoy being single as much as I used to, or I don't enjoy like living this lifestyle as much as I used to. And that's okay. It's actually fine.
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to say, because people don't fit into boxes. Like, the way that you are in romantic relationships when you're 18, you know, is very different from the way that you are when you're 23, 24, because you've gone through certain experiences that have shaped you. And, you know, maybe when you were 18, you had a bit more of a liberal approach to casual sex than you do now, or vice versa. You know, you could have been really terrified of anything like intimate when you're 18, when all your friends are, you know, quite the opposite. And then that comes later in life, when, and then all your friends are like, well, what are you doing? Like, it could be either way.
This happens with like so many things as well, like with drinking, when everyone was like, all my friends were like 18, like going wild, and I was like, I don't like alcohol. And then I was like, just like bloomed so much later, like in final year of uni, I was like, let's go out. And I was like, what are you talking about? We have finals. So yeah, try not to stress out about what your friends are doing. Just because your friends aren't single, they'll probably break up, to be honest, and then they'll be single. Like, it's going to happen. Honestly, it comes in waves. I've noticed it in my friends anyway. But good luck. Godspeed. And you can do it. Yeah. Everything will be great.
Keep fighting the good fight.
Absolutely. And very, we're good, so advice. Pleased you're enjoying Millennial Love. If you, listener, have also enjoyed Millennial Love, this particular episode, or just all of them, please, please, please head to Apple Podcasts or wherever else you get your podcasts and rate, review and subscribe, because it really helps us get into the charts and helps other people discover Millennial Love, which is all we want, really.
And you can also keep sending us your stories. We love receiving them.
Sorry as well. Yes, we're sometimes a bit slow at replying, but we will always reply, just sometimes slowly. Sorry.
We will. I think it's honestly actually one of my favourite parts of doing the podcast is reading your guys' stories and replying to them.
We always screenshot and send to each other.
Yeah, so it's really lovely. And so you can send them to us at millennial_love on our Instagram, or you can email us at millennial.love@independent.co.uk. Any story that you send us, if we do read it, would be kept anonymous, of course. So please do send them,
or just any thoughts about anything we've spoken about.
Exactly, we love to hear your feedback as well. If you have any ideas for topics, anything you're going through that you want us to touch on,
absolutely,
please do send your thoughts to us.
Yes, please do. Charlie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been really illuminating.
I always feel like I learn.
I feel a sense of growth.
Yes, we grow, we learn, we overshare. It's fantastic. Okay, where can everyone find you and all your wonderful work?
They can find me on Instagram, it's probably the best one, which is at CharlieCox1. It's Charlie with an L-Y, because I thought I'd make it that little bit more difficult.
Are you just fed up of telling people with a Y?
It's with a Y. It's with an L-Y. It's an L-Y. So CharlieCox1 on Instagram and Twitter, and at my house. Yeah. I'm there quite a lot.
Go around with cake. Come to mine with cake as well, please. That's all we've got time for today, guys. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for joining us, Charlie. And have a lovely week, everyone.
See you soon.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.